Is this on?
Yes, my lord.
Good. Hello, this is God speaking. Can we dial that down?
Yes, my lord.
Thanks. Welcome, new arrival, to the Eternity Ward. Please take a number and make your way down to the left or the right to the waiting room. All you need is the refreshments I made just for you. I would tell you to steer clear of the apples, they're forbidden, and the two snakes. I mean, fools, sorry, that are chewing the fat in the corner, but you probably wouldn't listen anyway. So good luck, I bless you, and on your way.
Welcome to the Eternity Ward, where we flick through really old and musty Reader's Digest, chat with our buddies, and wait for an appointment with God. I'm Chris Adams.
I'm Nick McKinnon. I really like those laughter is the best medicine sections of Reader's Digest. Yep. Do they still have those in Reader's Digest?
I don't know. We've only got these old ancient texts stacked beside us here in the Eternity Ward. But yeah, I reckon it's preferable to flick through those and just find the funny bits scattered throughout.
Yeah.
Do that while procrastinating about getting to our topic for tonight because we don't want to talk about it.
Well, I don't know. You don't.
It's a serious topic.
It is. But I like serious topics. Don't you like serious topics?
I do like talking about serious things. Mostly I just like talking about things that matter. Hence we have a podcast. And I think that what we're talking about tonight matters. I don't know if there's much we can do about it.
Yeah, it probably doesn't matter a lot to us, does it? But a lot of people on social media like to comment on it, Chris. That's the thing I've noticed.
Have you?
Yeah.
I've barely been on social media. I've been too busy. But school shootings, America.
It's the place not to be.
Yeah. I mean, in one sense, it's sort of because both of us have worked within schools for a long time. So that sort of gives us perspective.
Mm.
You hear about these things happening and you look around at your own workplace and you go, oh, it's such an alien thing. It's just...
It makes the drills that you have to do at school, I don't know, really weird, like thinking that that actually happens some places.
Yeah.
Whenever we did it, you know, at the schools I've worked at, I always sort of felt like, you know, this is a bit funny because it doesn't really happen in Australia.
Yeah.
Whereas, yeah, just knowing that that stuff happens in the US all the time.
Yeah. We've had lockdown drills.
Yeah.
The problem is trying to get the students to actually take it seriously. You know, you'll get the more rebellious students running around the school screaming, just pretending to be screaming, which is not very helpful.
Yikes.
But yeah, no, we had, well, we didn't have, but in Florida at Marjorie Stoneman High School, they had a mass shooting the other day, 17 people killed, mostly students, a few teachers. And there's been there's always a reaction. There's always an outpouring of grief and of anger. But it seems the reaction has been gathering a bit more momentum. You've been seeing a fair bit on social media, you're saying?
Yeah. Yeah, like you're saying about gathering momentum, it seems to sort of be getting bigger each time. Like it seems like the anti-gun lobby, well, I don't know if you call it a lobby, but they seem to be getting more traction each time.
Hmm.
But maybe that could just be in Australia because we like that story of, well, they should do what Australia did because Australia's been so successful and that makes us feel good about ourselves.
Mm.
We like it when John Oliver does a story about how good Australia is.
We do. I mean, and, you know, as much as I wasn't ever really a fan of John Howard during his prime ministership, he has this legacy now that he did something.
How ballsy was that?
Oh, it was. He stood up in front of our version of gun nuts, I guess. He went and fronted them. You know, he would go and front them and argue the point. And I can't even really imagine a politician getting up and fronting up to people who are that angry and trying to talk them out of their position. So, yeah, he...
It's almost like he had a principled position.
Yeah. So, in one sense, we, I guess, so to speak, we dodged a bullet by making it happen way back then. Because I think the further you go, the more guns in people's hands, the harder it is to turn the clock back. And he made it happen.
Round of applause for John Howard.
Yep. And everyone else that worked on that as well. And it does make you proud to be part of...
A Liberal Party supporter.
Proud to be part of this nation that has made that happen.
That's not me, by the way, in case anyone gets confused.
So why don't America do it? Why don't they just do what we did? Because it makes sense, right?
That's what a lot of people have been saying. that's one of the things that I don't think people are really looking at the reality of the situation in the US. The US is not Australia. The US has more guns than they do people. They have 300 million guns.
Mm.
Like, that's just hard to wrap your head around. The only time I've ever seen a gun in real life has been around the waist of a police officer.
Yeah.
In my life.
Yeah. And that's one of the things that gets me about all of this is what's considered normal. I don't want to go to America because the idea of walking down a street and just going, oh, that person coming the other way, they've probably got a gun or they might have a gun. That person might have a gun. That one over there might. Just the concept that there are all these guns in people's hands, that would be really fear-inducing to me. I don't like that idea at all. Like yesterday, for example, I had a house inspection. The lady who came here, she didn't have a gun. Then I went to work at school, you know, 60 staff, 700 students. Then I went to a radio show thing, met dozens more people. Then to a community dinner, dozens more people. Went to the shopping center, lots of people there. I reckon there's a good 99.9% chance that not one of the people I interacted with or walked past yesterday had a gun. And I like that. The idea that in America you'd be walking around, some places it's open carry, but some places, it's, you know, you can just carry, and what they accept as normal is just really bizarre to me. I don't get it.
I think most parts of America, it might be all, but certainly most parts of America, you have to have a license to carry your weapon with you, and to get that license is way more stringent than gun ownership, which is, you know, pretty much anyone can get a gun. Obviously, people could carry a gun without having a license, but I don't think you should imagine that just everyone carries their gun down to the supermarket with them.
No, well, I don't know, but I just find it interesting what Americans accept as normal. It's just I couldn't gather accepting that as normal, but I guess that's what you do. You grow up in that place, you live in that place, this is the normal thing, and you get used to it. But there's a bloody lot of people who are saying, we don't want this to be normal anymore because school shootings are becoming normal. Mass shootings. There's one every day. One every day. That's becoming normal, you know, in America, in the sense that it's becoming something which just happens too often. I'm not going to say normal as in, not normal as in acceptable.
I think it depends what you mean by mass shootings. Like, you know, there isn't what happened in Florida every day in the United States.
No, it's just a mass shooting is when three or more or four people or something get killed in the one incident by guns. And there's, on averages, there's at least one a day. A lot of them are related to crime.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's not like it's just if you go to the supermarket, you got a 50% chance of surviving.
No.
It's not like anything like that.
No.
So since 1982, the US has had on average 16.5 fatalities per year from mass shootings from the stats that I saw.
Sorry, say that again. 16.5 people.
Fatalities per year.
But one mass shooting a day would end up equating to over 1,000.
Maybe I need to look that up.
That seems wildly low.
Yeah. That certainly doesn't make sense with that.
Well, they have 33,000 die from gun-related deaths per year. You had that guy shooting from the balcony in Vegas, and it's not that long since the 50 or so died in the Orlando nightclub.
The Orlando nightclub was a couple of years ago.
Was it?
Yeah.
Are you looking for that?
Well, have you heard of Steven Pinker?
Don't think so.
You should get into him. He's good. So Steven Pinker wrote a book called The Better Angels of Our Nature, talking about how our perception of danger is easily distorted by rare events. So is gun violence increasing in the United States? No, but it certainly seems to be when one recalls recent atrocities in Newtown and Aurora. In fact, the overall rate of violent crime has fallen 22% in the last decade, 18% in the last 5 years. Ah, there it is. No, it wasn't the Steven Pinker one. I don't know how reliable this is.
Mm-hmm.
Have you heard of Mother Jones magazine?
No.
I haven't heard of that, so I don't know how reliable it is. Have you heard of Freakonomics Radio?
Yes.
So they did an episode on how to think about guns, and they quoted this magazine article that they built up a database of mass shootings with four or more fatalities over the past 30 years. This database excludes all gang shootings.
Mm-hmm.
And armed robberies.
Mm-hmm.
Is that fair or not? I don't know.
Mm.
But so excluding those gang shootings and armed robberies, there have been 62 mass shootings since 1982 with 513 fatalities. So two mass shootings and 16.5 fatalities per year. So it looks like the vast majority are either gang-related shootings or armed robberies.
Hmm. Well, they've gone beyond their quota already and we're only in February.
Yeah. But, of course, if you have a mass shooting in February, that's going to skew that year's data. Also, I don't know when that article was written. It wouldn't surprise me if there's been an uptick in the last 4 or 5 years.
It wouldn't surprise me in the sense that guns get better at killing people, and so, you know, you're able to do more damage with a gun.
I don't think it's that. I think there's an issue with males in society, the place of males in society.
Yeah.
I think that's a big issue.
Definitely.
Like, there was a New York Times article today that talked about how everyone likes to point out that, you know, whenever these mass shootings happen, the common link is the guns and that you need to ban guns. There's also another common link. It's always men.
Yeah, that's right.
It's never women that commit these things.
Yep.
That's something we have to think about, that men are, I mean, men are, have always been more violent than women. Like, that's not a new thing.
Mm.
And having more deadly weapons obviously increases that. So, in a sense, that's not surprising. I think it does connect with, like, when automation took over, it's often been the low-skilled jobs that working-class men have been doing that are the ones that have been first to get knocked off. And so, there are a lot of these men who are just finding no place in society for them to go.
Mm.
And these are the exact sort of people that end up just going, well, fuck it, I'm just going to go and be a celebrity for a day.
Mm, yeah. The draw cut of fame, especially out of a deep place of isolation. Yeah, that's a problem.
So should these things even be reported?
Yeah, well, it's interesting because, like, one of the things that struck me was, like, in looking at what's happening, I know that a lot of the teenagers, and I want to get to talking about them, the sort of movement thing that's happening. There's going to be a march on April the 20th to commemorate the 19th year since Columbine, the Columbine school shooting. So I'm going, that's 19 years ago, you know, and it's still going on. Yeah, but I remember the Michael Moore Bowling for Columbine documentary.
Such a good film.
Oh, it's amazing. But what that talked about a lot in that movie was America's culture of fear and how that contributes. Because, you know, you've got like a nation like Canada just above you where people have the same amount of guns, if not more, but they don't have all of these shootings. You know, a lot of the things that they were saying was Canadians on the news items, they just sort of have lots of positive news items. And Canadians are quite happy to leave their doors open at night, you know, and if someone sort of breaks in, they're like, you know, they don't just go for the gun and shoot people. Whereas Americans are fed this culture of fear. You know, and they have a history of fear and a history of guns. You know, it's something that's really deeply in.
Hold on a second.
Yeah, all right.
Pause there, Chris.
All right, I'll pause.
You're saying, maybe I misheard you, but are you saying that if you owned a gun, had it in your house, and if someone broke into your house, your first reaction wouldn't be, holy heck, I'm going to get my gun?
If you live in a nation where you don't think that the person that's breaking in is going to be coming with a gun or necessarily coming to harm you, they might just be coming to rob you, then...
But they're just coming in for a chat. They're just breaking in to sit down and watch Friends with me.
If you're living in a nation where everyone's got guns, someone's breaking into your house, your first thought is, well, they might have a gun, you know, and I've got to protect myself and kill them, because you've sort of been put into this constant state of fear about the other, you know, whereas if you live within a community which...
What do you mean the other?
The other...
Don't bring that up here.
What do you mean?
If someone breaks into your house, you're well within your rights to be afraid of them.
Oh, yeah.
I would say you're crazy if you're not afraid of the person that breaks into your house.
But it's at what level of fear are you entering into as soon as you hear someone scratching at the back door or something?
I am going into full-blown protection mode.
Okay.
Are you kidding? Well, that doesn't mean that that's the only possible explanation, but you should be prepared for it.
I remember when I was living in Burnie in a unit and I was on the bottom floor. I had people trying to break in often into my unit in Burnie, because I'd have to have the bedroom window open to get some air, you know. And suddenly, oh, there's some hands there trying to creep into my apartment, and I would grab my cue stick and just go whack, and they'd, you know, yell, and they'd run off. Yeah, I don't like it. You get all the adrenaline pumping, you know, but no one had to die. I wouldn't have thought that they're coming to harm me, you know. I'm thinking they're coming to rob me.
Yeah. But... like, if they had have got into your house while you were still sleeping and you woke up while they were ransacking the place, if they came across you, I would be fearful.
Oh,
Like, they may not have come in for the express purpose to hurt you, but, they, you know, I've got no reason to think they won't if they're backed into a corner or they're surprised or anything like that. Like, what do I know? I know they're willing to break into someone's house.
Mm. But we live in a country where you don't expect anyone that actually breaks into your house will actually be coming with a gun. The likelihood is pretty low.
Well, yeah. I mean, they're probably more likely to have a gun than the average person on the street.
Yeah, but I'm just thinking the level of fear and...
Yeah, it'd be different to in the US for sure.
Yeah. And so, yeah, so there's all these people that then want guns for protection because they live in a culture of fear. You know, it just sort of propagates more fear and more guns and it's exponential.
It is.
And because it's been so exponential for so long now, 19 years since Columbine, how do you turn the clock back?
How long did you live in Burnie for?
I lived there for a year and a half.
Did you ever think about owning a gun?
Nah.
With people constantly breaking in?
Nah. When I say constantly, you know, a year and a half, it was like five times. I don't want to make it sound like it's...
Burnie's the break-in capital of the world.
The place I've been living now for nearly 4 years, not once we've had anyone try and break in. That's up in Western Sydney.
So if you lived in the US, would you think about owning a gun or would you definitely own a gun?
That's a really good question.
Thank you, Chris. Round of applause for Nick now. Yeah. Come on, John Howard, ring up and applaud me.
Because that's a different world. It's a different normal. It's a different situation. You know that the people...
This is the thing. Yeah. This is the thing that pisses me off when people start shooting their mouth off about the US, like people in Australia shooting their mouth off, is that you don't live there. You're talking about it like it's the same as Australia. You're talking about it like it's a country where it doesn't have 300 million guns. It does. It's a different thing. You can't just say what worked for Australia will work for the US. It's far too simplistic.
Okay.
Anyways, carry on, Chris. Sorry.
I don't even know what I was going to say.
Mini rant over.
Oh, would I buy a gun?
So if you lived in the US... Would you own a gun?
No. Nah.
You would have thought about it, though, by the sounds of it.
Only fleetingly. I mean, I don't think I'm safer with a gun, and I can't see any situation where I'd want to own a weapon that's purpose is to kill another human being. Again, I'm not a parent like you, so that might change. But
what? You can't think of any situation? Your imagination is flawed.
Is it?
Yeah, certainly.
Explain to me how it's flawed.
Let's say that you've been walking down a dark alley, someone's just pulled a knife on you, punched you, you're on your back, he's jumped on your chest and he's got it around your throat. You wouldn't want a gun in that situation?
I would want a gun, but I'm not going to own a gun and I'm not going to go and walk down the alley if I can help it.
Yeah, okay.
What about owning, you know, I definitely consider owning a non-lethal device.
Aha, such as?
Taser or even just pepper spray or whatever things that they can come up with that's a non-lethal device. Because part of the problem is if I've got a lethal weapon, then the person that I'm in conflict with is immediately going to raise the conflict to a situation where they're going to want a lethal weapon too. I think it just puts everyone in more danger because, okay, I might have a lethal weapon, but I'm going to be as good at using it as they are. Whereas if I've got a non-lethal weapon, they might be less inclined to want to kill me or they might be less inclined to be able to take my weapon off me and kill me with it. The idea of owning a weapon that I can kill other people with, the responsibility of taking a life from another human being, like I will defend myself as much as I can in the situation where that's required. I will defend others as much as I can. I'll put my life in danger. If I lose my life, I lose it.
So I agree with you that the idea of non-lethal weapons is a good idea.
Yeah, sure.
The reality that I've heard from personal security experts is that they just aren't anywhere near as effective as guns are.
Yeah.
That they don't work all the time. If you hit the wrong spot, it doesn't work. Or if they're wearing a lot of clothes, then it can just be ineffective.
Yep.
So I like the idea of them, but if they don't work, then I don't want to own one and have to be thinking, well, I have to hit open skin for it to work. There'd be no point even having it, I don't think. Yeah, from the stuff I've listened to, it isn't effective, whereas a gun is.
Mm. You ever shot a gun?
No.
Really?
Would you like to? I'd like to.
I have.
Yeah.
When I was younger, you know, my uncles.
Hang on. Can I revise my answer?
Sure.
I shot a potato gun.
Yeah, okay.
You know those ones that you poke into a potato and shoot them?
Yeah.
Those things are awesome. Anyway, sorry, Chris, carry on.
No. I just remember being taken out by my uncles when I was young.
Woo, you were taken out by your uncles?
To shoot some cans from a distance from the back of the ute. I even went along duck hunting once. But
yeah, I couldn't do that.
It was so cold and so wet. I didn't even pick up a gun while I was there. I was just like, I don't want to be here. It's horrible. Can I go home now? I want to go home. But I'm just the idea of guns. I just hate them. I wouldn't ever own a gun. I'd rather take my chances, rather try and defend myself in other ways. And if there are consequences to that, so be it.
So if there was some sort of violent situation that you were in, would you try to call the police?
Yeah, sure. I'd try and call the police. It depends what situation in the is that going to help?
Yeah. So what would be the point of calling police?
Because they'll come with guns.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, and have
you ever called the police?
They'll also come with authority, and they'll also come with training. They'll come with ways of being able to de-escalate issues, you know, you would hope, and all of that.
But you've got that, though. You've got the way of de-escalating.
Yeah, I do.
But
I have called the police. I have, yeah.
How long did it take for them to turn up?
5 minutes.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Geez, I called them once and it took, I think, 45 minutes for them to turn up.
Yeah, it can just depend on how high on the priority you are, I guess. And it can depend on their location and depend on how many there are and all sorts of variances.
If you live in a place where people can break into your house, if they break into your house, they're very likely to have a gun on them.
Mm.
And you know that calling the police could take 5 minutes, or, I mean, even 5 minutes is a long time to be in a house with an intruder, or it could take 45 minutes, in which case you are totally fucked. I can totally understand why people would own guns in the US.
Yeah.
So like, it seems weird to me that you would say that you hate guns, but then you would absolutely call someone who has a gun.
I don't think that's weird.
Well, why wouldn't you just be
the person that is well-trained with a gun? No, why wouldn't I be the person well-trained with a gun?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, it just goes back to it's against my beliefs, essentially. But then you're going to say, well, why are you calling this person with guns?
You need a better answer than that.
Why?
Chris.
Why do I need a better answer than that?
It's against my beliefs.
It's that thing of you live by the sword, you die by the sword. And I don't want to live within any sort of violent framework. I don't think that having a gun makes me safer.
So if you were alive during World War II, and you were conscripted to go fight against the Nazis, you would just put your hands up and say, Nazis, shoot me because I don't shoot people. Are you serious?
I'd rather be that guy in the movie, The Pacifist, who saves all of his buddies that came out, the big movie.
No idea what you're talking about. You're the movie buff, Chris.
Okay, so, you know, there's a thing called a conscientious objector.
There is.
So I think I would probably have to be a conscientious objector.
In every single war.
Well, okay.
Like, I get being a conscientious objector. Jeez, I screwed that word up. A conscientious objector.
Yeah.
I can understand that in the Iraq War or the Afghanistan War or Vietnam War. I do not understand that for World War II. I do not understand that, you know, when the Japanese were invading Darwin.
Well,
no. If you want to be a pacifist in that situation, then I think you are not living in the real world.
I still think there's a role you can play. You know, you can be a chaplain, you can be a medic, you know, you can play a role. But, you know, in a situation where your nation is being invaded, people are running up your shores and shooting up your people, you know, yeah, I think I could pick up a gun in that situation.
Even if it's not your country, like if it's Poland that's being invaded by the Nazis, like you would just go, well, bad luck, you guys can deal with yourselves.
I don't know.
I'm sitting this out because I'm a pacifist.
Yeah, I mean, like I've never had to really decide. I've thought about if I was ever in sort of a situation like that, would I be a conscious objector, would I not? It is difficult for me to answer definitively.
See, I think Vietnam has really warped the left on this issue because Vietnam was so horrific and so unjustifiable that the left has just gone, well, no war is justifiable. And it's just not true. There are times when there are truly evil people who get into power who use that power for truly evil means.
Yep.
If good people aren't going to stand up to them, well, then we're all screwed. If all the left-wing people are just going to put their hands up and just say, well, we're pacifists, we're not going to engage in this. Yeah, I think the West is in real trouble if that's where the left is heading.
Well, I'm happy to be on the left with your view of my warped perspective of seeing an end to unjustifiable and all war. I think we need that voice. But I don't think you've got anything to worry about. I don't think we're heading that way at all anyway. We in the West seem pretty relaxed and content with having a military and having a very strong defense force.
Excellent. Good.
And the money we in the world, most especially the US, spend on military stuff is obscene. So we're hardly in a situation where we're going to lay down our guns and be rolled over.
We don't want ISIS taking over Australia.
No, I don't think...
We don't even want China taking over Australia. Like, that would not be good either. if you want a country with good human rights records, I mean, the countries in the West are about as good as any other country in human history. That doesn't mean we're perfect.
Nowhere near it, but yeah. Yeah, I know what you're saying.
We don't throw gays off rooftops. It's a completely different level.
Does anywhere else in the world have school shootings the way that America is having? They're a unique Western nation. They are the only Western nation that seems to be having this ongoing issue.
I don't know the answer to that question. I think neither answer would surprise me because, like, if there's a school shooting in Guatemala, the news just ain't going to pick it up because they know that they're not white people and so we just generally don't care.
There have been school shootings in other nations, but generally it's someone of a different religion or a different tribe, you know, going in, you know, an adult going in and shooting up children. It's not a schoolmate going in and shooting them up. It's a...
Well, the Taliban.
It's all horrific, but it's of a different sort, but it's all horrific, yeah. You were going to say.
The Taliban went in and shot, I think it was 118 students or something like that in, I guess, either Iraq or Afghanistan.
Yeah, unbelievable.
Well, it is unbelievable. But yeah, they think they're doing the will of God. They honestly believe those kids went straight to paradise. Better for those kids to have died there than to have grown up in a country that the US were taking over. Pernicious beliefs, Chris.
Let's get back to the US. What's driving the, I mean, what do these kids believe they're doing when they go and shoot up a school? I don't know. It's probably too hard a question.
Yeah.
They're not psychologists.
And we don't know any of the people, but yeah, they're clearly disturbed human beings. Like, I don't know if it was Trump or someone like that. I think it was Trump. He talked about them as being like, these guys are losers and that sort of thing, and talking about how it's a mental health issue.
Mm.
I agree with both of those statements. I actually think that's the way, I don't think he's the right messenger, but I do think the more we can describe what pathetic individuals these are, the less other people will be inspired to go and do the same thing.
You don't think that there's a danger that if you're describing them as losers and then there are students around the school through bullying that get described as losers, that they may go, well, if I'm a loser, this is what I'm going to do because that's what losers do. You know, is there not some sort of correlation potentially?
Like, obviously, if you were the president or someone that anyone actually listened to, you'd probably want to get a psychologist's point of view on that sort of a question. You wouldn't want to just go shooting your mouth off, as Trump is very capable of doing.
Yep.
I can see that. The other thing that I think could be a risk is these people who commit these sort of atrocities already feel like outsiders. And so if the president of the United States is saying these sort of things, well, they probably don't give a fuck because these are the exact sort of people that are already bullying me and treating me horrendously. So yeah, I think that's a possibility. So I don't know, but I can also see the benefit in doing it. If we can dissuade, if we can put just no incentive for anyone to actually want to be described in those sort of terms in public, then that's got to be a good thing. But that's why I said before that I wonder if we just need to not report on them. Like,
yeah,
fair enough, report that, you know, a bunch of people got killed, but don't talk about who the person is. Don't talk about their name. Do not report any of that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
The police can do all that sort of stuff behind the scenes. There's no reason that I need to know the name of the person that did that.
Yeah. It's tricky because then as a journalist, as a news broadcaster, you're wanting to find things that you think are in the public interest. And if you think it's in the public interest for them to know that shooter's name, then you're going to go and report it. And, you know, so how do you get everyone to agree that it's no longer in the public interest to do that?
There is a genuine reason why, if you're a journalist, that you would want to publish that sort of stuff. Because if you say that we're never, ever going to publish the names of these sort of people, that's when totalitarian governments can end up just, you know, killing whoever the hell they want and no one reports on it.
Right.
So, yeah, okay, there is a negative externality there.
Yeah,
yeah, so if it's not mandatory, then today, tonight, I'm going to report it every single time.
Yeah, and if you're the sort of person, because you're going to feel like you want to know, you know, what's their name and one...
Everyone wants to know. And one, like, broadcast, I want to know.
One broadcaster on principle is not going to do it, but all the other one is going to say, you're going to go to the one that is going to say because...
And everyone's going to go to the one that's going to say.
Because you want more data. You want more. You want to know why. You want to know why. Why'd they do it? You want to know who they are. You want to know the story behind them.
Yeah.
But it's not necessarily in the public interest for us all to know because it just continues to add to that culture of fear and add to the fame. It's all messed up, all really tricky, all really complicated. But surely you have to be able to do something. And this is what I've been really impressed with is the students that have come out of the high school that have been shouting from the rooftops, taking on Trump, taking on senators, taking on the Republican Party, the NRA, taking on apathy, these young people, high school students. I work with high school students. Listening to these young people like Emma Gonzalez, who was, you know, one of the senior students at that school, she was just angry and talking about, you're going to read about us in textbooks because we're going to be not just the school that got shut up, but we're going to be the school that we got shut up, but then we changed history and we, you know, we were the last school for that to happen to because we made a stand. That may not be reality, but that's...
Yeah, she's wrong.
But it's a powerful message and she's been pulling no punches at all. She's just been, you know, getting stuck into people. Like today on CNN, there was another kid took on Marco Rubio, who's this one of the senators down in Florida, kept asking him, so how much NRA money donations have you taken? You know, and he just kept deflecting the question. The kid was like, you know, I don't think you answered my question. I want to know how much, you know, money you've taken from the... And he kept deflecting and he kept deflecting, you know, and the kid just... Cameron Caskey, I think his name was, he just kept coming at him.
I would love it if, like, every news organisation just decided, right, we're not going to ask him one more question until he answers that question. So he can turn up to news conferences for months, but he's not going to get a question asked of him other than how much money have you had from the NRA?
Yep.
I would love that. How good would that
That'd be? That'd be awesome. Yeah, and good on him, a kid, for doing that, you know, choosing to do that. But yep. Marco Rubio was, so he was a bit on the spot and he was saying, look, it's really complicated trying to figure out how do you ban, you know, these assault rifles, you know, and all this sort of stuff. You know,
that's true,
then,
by the way.
I know, but then he says, I don't know how you figure out where you draw the line. Maybe we sort of let it slip that, you know, maybe if we banned all assault rifles, and the whole crowd just cheered. He didn't mean to say that he wants to ban all assault rifles, but that just was a sentence that came out of his mouth in trying to explain how difficult it is, and they all cheered. And he's like, oh, yeah, okay, I get your point. But it's,
yeah.
But I'm like, but 80%, the last time I heard this was like a shooting like a year ago, 80% of Americans want gun reform and they're still not getting it.
Yeah. But the issue is like, what do you actually do? Like, it's cool that these students are having their voice heard and are standing up for what they believe in. That's awesome.
Yep.
But like, you have to actually have an idea of what is practical and achievable.
Well, the hashtag never again, which goes with, you know, Emma Gonzalez saying that this is the last time. So, the you know, that's the hashtag, never again. So they're holding a march.
We don't need a hashtag, Chris.
Well, it's...
We need a piece of policy that will actually be effective.
Well, what they're calling for, they're having a march on March the 24th. And what they're calling for is a banning of semi-automatic and automatic weapons. They're asking for people not to be able to have access to what are essentially military-grade weapons. No one needs that.
Yeah.
That's what they're asking for. Why is that unreasonable?
That's not unreasonable.
Right.
The main problem is that the people that are calling for these reforms aren't gun owners. And what that means is they have no idea what they're talking about. When they say semi-automatic and automatic weapons, they think that there's, you know, some cutoff point somewhere where this gun is automatic and this one isn't. And it's just not the real world. That there are pistols that can shoot just as quickly as the AR-15 rifle. And so, like, what do you do? Like, there's always going to be a line there somewhere that is very, very grey. Now, that's not saying you shouldn't do it. I'm not saying that, you know, like, I agree. There is absolutely no reason that any right-minded human being should own an AR-15 assault rifle. It's crazy. Yeah. So the intent behind what they're talking about is really noble. And not just noble, it, you know, they're right. Like, if you could ban all those things, you absolutely should. But politicians can't just have a hashtag that says, you know, a one-line thing about semi-automatic weapons and automatic weapons. You've got to actually have a line somewhere. And once you've done that, you've then also got to have some body that judges this weapon is in that category and this one's in the other category. And then to focus on assault rifles, it's almost beside the point. So in the US, there's something like 11,000 gun deaths every year.
I thought it was 33,000 a year.
No, 11,000 gun-related murders every year.
Okay, all right.
I mean, there's probably a bunch more suicides, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's a huge number, but only 3% of them are through assault rifles. So if you ban all assault rifles and semi-automatic rifles, you've dropped that number by 3,000. So it's not nothing. I'm not saying it's nothing, but it's not huge either. Don't pretend like that is solving the problem. When you've got 300 million guns in a country,
it's... One of the problems is being able to shoot a large number of people in a very short space of time.
Yeah, kind of. But if you walk into a school with a pistol, it's not going to be hard to kill 15 people.
It would be harder than with an assault rifle, which is more high-powered. The bullets do more damage.
I don't know if that's true. Again, we are not gun people.
No, but the size of a gun goes a lot to how high-powered it is and the size of the bullets that it will carry and the damage that they will do, you know. So that's why, you know, you have a tank and a battleship and, you know, they've got guns too.
Tanks in every school.
They get bigger and bigger. That's Chris's idea. They get bigger and bigger.
All right, let's say that these kids get their wish and that assault rifles are banned. What does that mean in practice? Does that mean that they're just no longer available for sale? Or does it mean that if you own one, you have to hand it in? Like, what does that mean?
Yeah, I don't know.
That's the problem. Yeah, like, you have to know.
Well, I don't know. Maybe they have an idea. I don't really know. But you've got to start somewhere. You've got to start doing something. You can't just let it keep going on.
But if you say that we're not going to allow the sale of them anymore, that gives a massive advantage to the people that already have them. Because you now can't defend yourself. If someone walked into your house as one of them, you can't go and buy one to defend yourself against that. The other side of it is if you say everyone has to hand it in, it's compulsory, you're not allowed to keep these in your house, guess who's going to hand them in? The people that weren't going to use them anyway. The law-abiding citizens are the only ones that are going to hand them in.
Yeah, look, I really don't know what you do. I do feel like the US has gone too far to turn back. But hopefully these kids can at least hit the brakes. I reckon this is that sort of moment in time where, what was the quote? Never doubt that a small group of thoughtful, committed citizens can change the world. Indeed, it's the only thing that ever has. I like that. So here's a bunch of high school students that have seen immense brutality up close, and when those that have been most visibly affected rise up in a moment in time, there's a chance to turn it into a movement. And we've seen rich folk like Clooney, Oprah, Spielberg, they've been donating money to help create some structure around the movement, I guess, to help them get traction and maintain it and take on the NRA, which I reckon themselves are a movement of their own that's been established for such a long time. But yeah, so I'm like, yeah, be the change, take them on. I was even saying to Biz, I reckon all high school students should just go on strike until their demands for this policy change are met.
I'm pretty sure... They suggested that. That's not your idea. Sorry, Chris.
Yeah, I know. Biz said that they were doing that anyway.
Oh, right.
And I was like, cool. That's great. I was really happy with that. Because if it's buybacks or hand them in or whatever, and that can be scary with gun nuts who could take you to civil war. So I don't know how you do it, but you got to do something. Can't just sit on your hands.
But you have to have an idea of how to do it. Well, you can't just start a hashtag, start a movement, get people crying, and then pretend like you've done something.
Calling for a ban of automatic and semi-automatic assault rifles like the AR-15.
Yeah, but I've just explained why that's going to be a drop in the bucket. If that's your focus, you're not achieving much.
I think they also want, you know, raise the age, do background checks and checks of those with a diagnosed mental illness.
Yeah, those have got to be no-brainers. Yeah. It's insane that that is not already a thing.
A cooling off period as well. All sorts of things can and should be implemented.
The idea that they have gun shows, like, that is obscene to me.
Yep.
Like, why would you ever have a gun show? Like, you don't want anyone to be an impulse buyer of an assault rifle. That's crazy.
It's all under their constitutional right to bear arms.
I've got no problem with the idea that they can bear arms. Like, if I lived in the US, I don't know that I'd definitely own a weapon, but I would definitely think very seriously about it. So I get that, but not gun shows, not assault rifles. Like, that's just, yeah, I don't know what that is. That's not in their constitution. None of that is in their constitution. When the constitution was written, you know, you're talking about muskets that could fire one shot every 3 minutes or something crazy like that.
That's the thing. It was written for a different time. Update it. Amend your constitution, damn it. You know, they can do that, but they pretend that they can't.
They can amend it. Go for it. But the problem is there is a reality on the ground. Yeah.
They think that it's unamendable. Go on.
But even if you made amendments to it, you have to have something that is practically implementable. You can't just say we're going to take every weapon off every person in the country because that's unachievable. It's not going to happen. So if that's your idea, well, go away. You're not helping. You're not contributing to the debate. You need to have something that actually looks at the situation, the reality on the ground in that particular country and says what will work. Banning every gun in the country isn't going to work. Buybacks will not work.
They're not asking for that. They're asking for the banning of unreasonable weapons that are in the hands of citizens.
Yeah, and that makes sense, but it's a drop in the bucket.
Well, not to them. And when the AR-15 has been the weapon of choice, take it away.
Like,
what about Trump's idea to give guns to teachers or janitors or librarians? What do you think of that idea?
Yeah, this is a really good idea, obviously.
Because all of his ideas are good, obviously.
Well, no, not all. I mean, building a wall to keep Mexicans out is a stupid idea. So the problem with Trump is so many people just as soon as they hear the word Donald Trump, they just immediately have a reaction of, oh, God, it's the devil. And Trump is not the devil. He's an idiot. And, well, he's probably not even an idiot. He's probably quite intelligent. But, you know, whatever. He's not my kettle of fish, and I'm sure he's not your kettle of fish. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean that we just reject any idea that he comes up with. Again, thinking about this from an Australian perspective, I would not want any teacher in Australia to have a firearm.
No. Yeah.
Never.
No.
But we are not talking about Australia. We are talking about a country with 300 million guns.
Mm-hmm.
And in that circumstance, again, I don't want a gun in my house because I think the risks of owning a gun about, you know, me not locking the safe properly or my kids getting their hands on, I think that is a bigger risk than someone breaking into my house and doing something to me. So when I look at it in Australia, in my circumstance, I don't think it's worth owning a gun. In the US, it is different. You have to look at the circumstance. And so in the US, with that number of guns in the country, the more responsible, well-trained people who know how to use their gun, surely that's a good thing. Now, does that mean teachers should be that person? Well, maybe, maybe not. I don't know. But I don't think it's a batshit crazy idea that a lot of other people just think it's insane. You know, teachers should be focusing on teaching. They shouldn't be worrying about learning how to shoot or whatever. Yeah, maybe, maybe not. The groundsman might be the right person. Certainly the schools I've worked at, if I was to choose someone in my school that would be the most likely to be keen to go and do a training course every month to learn how to shoot their gun effectively, yeah, they might be the right person for that. I presume you disagree, which is why I like this topic.
yeah, I disagree. I think that's falling into the folly of what they're falling into, that throwing more guns at a situation is going to solve it. We're going further and further down this track of more and more guns and more fear and more guns in more people's hands. But again, I don't know how you wind the clock back. So if you can't wind the clock back, but I'm just teachers with guns. What if a student tries to steal it off them? The students get bloody angry all the time. What if a teacher loses their shit? What if? Do we potentially create another issue? Well, not us, but do they potentially create another issue? It's dangerous. It's dangerous.
Definitely things to think about.
Yeah.
Definitely things that would need to be thought about. But so, like, when this shooting starts happening, like, say, some loser walks into the school with a gun, starts shooting people, what happens? People call the police.
Mm.
They call the police because they have guns and because they're well-trained.
Mm.
So adding guns to the situation is a positive thing. It's not a negative thing. The idea that you can say that adding guns to a situation makes it worse, I just don't agree with. Adding guns to the situation, if they're being used by well-trained, responsible adults, that's a good thing. And so if you can have one of those people in every school, if I'm a mentally ill person, I'm very unlikely to choose a school. I'll go and choose a shopping center or a cinema or a nightclub.
And so do we need to train people in all of those other venues as well to have someone's got a gun at the cinema, someone's got a gun at the shopping center, so everywhere? Everywhere?
Maybe. I think that is an entirely reasonable thing to consider.
I'm never visiting the States.
Yeah, there's a combination of this issue and their healthcare system, which scares the shit out of me about visiting the United States. Yeah. If I get shot, I'm screwed. I don't want to have to pay, you know, $500,000 to get a bullet pulled out of me.
I feel like saying that they're all mentally ill, but I know that 80% of people want gun reform. It's amazing that they can't push that through. I get that people aren't just going to vote on the one thing.
You can want reform,
yeah,
but then you've actually got to have something that will work.
Well, the Republicans don't seem to want reform. They keep winding regulations back. Trump did that. Rubio did that. They actually wound regulations back that Obama put in place.
Yeah, but maybe they were the wrong reforms. Maybe Obama brought in reforms that were drafted up by people who have never owned a gun in their life and have no idea about the reality of the situation.
To prevent people with a diagnosed mental illness from having a firearm.
Yeah, that one's pretty hard to justify.
Yeah.
If that's all it was, which I wouldn't know, but I don't necessarily trust the left to report things accurately.
It wouldn't be as clear cut as that, but that was at the heart of whatever it was, you know. So there might be a bit more nuance around that, but yeah.
Yeah.
But that's what Obama had put in place and Trump repealed, or he let its expiry date come up and didn't renew it or something.
So do we agree that gun buybacks won't work?
No, not necessarily. I wonder about that. I'm darn pessimistic because of the amount of people that would hoard them and hide and fight the government from trying to take their guns away. That's freaking scary. But I'm going, well, if they claim that their economy is one of the richest and strongest in the world, then, I mean, it's a massive economical thing to buy back guns. But we did it. Maybe they could.
Are you imagining a compulsory gun back or a voluntary gun buyback?
Oh, I wasn't really discerning between the two.
All right, I'll shoot both down in flames. If it's voluntary,
yeah,
the only people that are returning guns are people that either had no intention of owning a gun in the first place, or people that have guns that are 300 years old that don't work anyway. Because if I just bought a gun for $300 for self-protection, there's no way I'm giving it up for a government buyback of $50 or $100.
Mm-hmm.
So the only people that are giving them back in voluntary situations are people that have guns that don't work or they never wanted it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
They're not the guns you need to get out of the society. And if it's compulsory, guess who's given the guns back? All the lawful people. No one else.
I'm just thinking, if you decrease the number of guns within a nation, then potentially you decrease the amount of fear within that nation.
No, I don't think so.
Okay. You can see the fear expanding.
If
because
I was one of those gun owners that had a gun in my house and was well trained and kept it safely locked away, I can understand how that would be a comforting thing. Now, if then the government says you have to give that up and I'm a law-abiding person and I do give it up, I feel more fearful.
Right.
You know who gun buybacks are good for?
Who?
They're good for the politicians because they get to stand in front of a big pile of guns and set them on fire. And then they're also good for the anti-gun lobby because they get to feel like they had a victory, even though it didn't achieve anything.
Did it achieve anything in Australia?
Yeah. Yeah, I think it did.
Yeah.
But Australia is not America.
No.
We didn't have 300 million guns.
No, they're a bigger problem.
Yeah, so it's not the same thing.
Could you draw similarities but then scale it up and scale it up and scale it up?
No, I don't think so.
You don't think so? I might tend to agree with you, but you know, I'm open to the fact that this movement of young people grows. The next shooting, there's more growth in this movement. And at some point, America is not going to stand for it. At some point, they're going to actually come together. And at some point, they might do something. I'm pessimistic, but I'm also...
Even if all of that happens, you've got to have something to do. Gun buybacks are not one of those things that you can do. Like, they just won't achieve anything. Unless you really think there's a possibility that you might convince every single citizen in America to hand in their guns. If you think that's a reality, then okay, that would work. It's just never going to happen.
Well, not without leadership and unity, no. They're a long way from making America great. But there's still the obvious things. Don't put more guns out there. Make it harder to get them. Ban military-grade assault rifles from being in civilian hands. Have background checks, mental health checks, raise the age, all of that, etc. Do them all. Stop making excuses it's too hard or it won't help. Just stop being a dick. Do all of that and at least then, you know, reevaluate from there.
See, the biggest thing that I think could be done, the most positive thing that could actually help, the US needs to treat guns like you treat any other dangerous object, like so a car. To be able to drive a car, you have to get a license. And the way you do it isn't just some, you go and fill in some forms and then you get it. It's not even just a background check where they check you've got mental illness, but you actually have to go and do a whole bunch of training. You have to have done however many hundreds of hours it is sitting next to a person that is qualified to teach you how to use that.
Yeah.
I think that's the way to do it, because if I'm some mentally ill person, if I've got to go down to the local gun club and I've got to be there, you know, every month for 2 years before I'm allowed to purchase one.
Yep.
If I'm that gun club, I do not want the next mass shooter to have come through my training program. I reckon that's the way you do it. You've got incentives all pulling in the right direction that the people doing the training do not want to let someone through that's mentally ill, and the impulse person ain't going to be able to get a weapon because they're going to have gone through 2 years of every month turning up to a gun club. And as well as that, it actually gives like what I think is vital training for people that do, you know, responsible people who do choose to own a weapon. Like I don't think there's anything wrong with an American choosing they want to buy a weapon. Like I think I'd be very possibly one of those people who would choose to go down that route too. But if I did it, regardless of what the law was, I would want to get heaps of training because I would want to know how to use it effectively and make sure that I'm not going to leave the safety off or anything stupid. And I want to know that when I have it in my hands that I'm capable of using it effectively.
Yep. And you know who's not going to do that training? The NRA. Make a new body. Destroy the NRA. That's the other thing you need to do, is dismantle that. Destroy that evil, bastardized, evil as shit thing.
Disagree.
No.
You're wrong.
No, I'm right.
You're wrong.
How so?
Chris, you can't choose which organizations to ban.
I'm not saying ban them. I'm saying destroy them.
You want to shoot all their members?
No, not to shoot all their members. I just want their organization of greed, which profits from putting the US in this bigger hole, just to be mud.
Well, the way to do that is not for people who know nothing about guns to come out and start slagging off about gun owners. That's not helpful.
Yeah, maybe.
But what I do agree with you is the political donation side of it.
Yep.
But not just the NRA. I think it has to be everywhere.
Yeah.
But that's a completely different podcast.
But NRA, oh, I hope these kids tear the NRA to pieces.
I hope these kids find a real solution. And I really mean that.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
I don't think anyone, you know, Marco Rubio does not like that there are people being killed. I don't care how evil you think he is. Like,
I didn't say that he was evil.
No. I don't mean you personally, but I'm sure there are people who think any politician that defends gun owners must be, they see them in the same light as they see the gun shooters.
They should have trouble sleeping at night.
Yeah, I disagree. Mm-hmm. Well, no.
I'm not going to say they're evil, but I think that they're in bed with the devil in some respect. Taking that money.
Yeah, that's the political donations thing again.
All right. A new question then. This is usually, you know, a God stuff podcast. What do you think of the backlash to what is essentially its own hashtag? We're sending our thoughts and prayers to that.
You've talked a lot about symbolism in the past, Chris.
Yeah.
I guess it's nice for symbolism. I don't think it does anything.
I think it's been pissing a lot of people off. Because if your thoughts and prayers don't come with any practical action, they're pretty hollow.
Well, no, not necessarily. Do you believe in an afterlife, Chris?
Yeah.
Because all of those people that just got shot, you don't need to worry about them. They're having a ball right now.
But their lives were cut brutally short.
No, they weren't.
Yes, they were.
They have everlasting life, Chris, unless you don't believe in everlasting life. And then, yeah, you're right, their life was cut short.
These were young people that had their lives ahead of them. They were going to go and, you know, have families. They were going to have careers. They were going to love. They were going to explore the world. And they were cut brutally short.
Yeah, but if heaven is better than here, I mean, presumably that's a given.
It doesn't make it any less for me because – I mean, I'm doubtful around the whole afterlife-y thing, exactly what I believe, but I'm still leaning that there is something there, and if I'm leaning to that, then that's where they are. But all of us are going to end up there, but for them to have their lives here, their time here, cut that short, and all of the people that have been left behind in pain for losing them, it's just horrific.
The pain of the people that are still here.
The pain of the people that are still here for losing their loved ones, yes.
Yeah, that would be horrific pain.
Yeah, but it's...
So, yeah, thoughts and prayers to those people, absolutely. But not for the people that are dead. They're in heaven.
Oh, yeah.
They've been taken to a better place.
Oh, the thoughts and prayers aren't for them. Are they?
I don't know. I don't.
Well, well I do thoughts are. Thoughts are. But the prayers wouldn't be for them.
So your thoughts and prayers should be for the atheist parents that are still alive whose kids got killed. Because if it's a religious person whose kids got killed, well, they believe that their kid is now in paradise. There's nothing to be crying about. If you actually believe that, dear listeners, please believe that that's not what I believe. So I think these people did have their lives tragically cut short and they probably have nothing to gain in being dead. It's just pure tragedy. But if you are a person that believes there's an afterlife, well, it's got to be a good thing. Take me there now.
But no, it doesn't have to be a good thing. I can understand that you're saying that pernicious thought can be, you know, within someone's ideology. But I think that you simplify that concept too much.
Explain to me how it's a bad thing that you could be taken to paradise.
Well, it's not bad that you're taken to paradise. Being taken to paradise is not bad. Being taken away from the world and the life that you are going to have is bad.
Yeah, but you are either spending the next 60 years of your life on Earth with the pain and struggles that life on Earth brings, or you're spending that extra 60 years in paradise.
Now that's, I don't know if years count there because that's eternity.
So kill me at birth then. Take me straight there.
Our life here now, right, Nick? We have this life here now. Right.
So confirmed.
Okay. If God exists and if there is this eternal existence or not, but if God exists, then this life, there's meaning and purpose in it. And if you don't believe that God exists, I think you can still find meaning and purpose in life. But if you do believe God exists and you do believe in an afterlife, well, there's still meaning and purpose here. Otherwise, there wouldn't be a here. We'd just be born straight into heaven, essentially. Just be created there and live in eternity there. You know, this existence matters and being cut from this existence matters.
Because what?
So going to be with God is not a bad thing, but being cut from your life is bad because it matters.
If that's the case, then reincarnation is a nicer idea than having a heaven. You shouldn't want to go to heaven. When you die, you should want to be like reincarnated as another person and get to do it all over again. If there's something to be gained here that you won't get to gain in heaven, well, get rid of heaven. Just keep coming back as another human being.
Yeah, well, in one sense, I don't mind getting rid of the normal idea of heaven and eternity.
Eternal not meaning what eternal means.
Well, just here and now matters. And the Christian concept should be bringing heaven to earth. And 17 people being killed in a school, that's not bringing us closer to that.
That is definitely hell.
So the focus for me is on here and on now.
Yep, agreed.
Oh, did you see that meme, that t-shirt that a lot of Christians were sharing? Because this made me angry. I want to see your reaction to it. So on a t-shirt it says, "Dear God, why do you allow so much violence in our schools? Signed, a concerned student. Dear concerned student, I'm not allowed in schools. God."
That's really funny.
And then you think about it and it's not.
Why? That is funny. What's not funny about it?
Well, what I read into that is it's saying that those students all deserve to die because we're in a country now where we've said we're not going to pray at the start of the day. We're not going to have scripture in school. And so God's not allowed in school. And so then God's not there to protect you. So all of those students deserve to die. There's so much bad ideology in that. And like if you're a Christian, to say is if that stops God from being present.
I'm glad we agree that Christianity is a pernicious ideology, Chris.
There are pernicious ideologies within that for sure.
But it is not analogous to say that nowhere on that shirt did it say that they deserved to die. It's just drawing the fairly logical conclusion that if you take the Ten Commandments out of schools, then the students there aren't going to be hearing the message of God. And so God can't be held responsible. Again, I don't agree with them.
No.
But they're not saying that these kids deserve to die. You're just saying that because you disagree with them.
But I think it's ideas like that t-shirt which lead to bad ideology. If I was a family member of someone that got shot.
Oh, you'd be furious.
I'd be pretty furious about that t-shirt.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. You had a fair bit of a go at me about it earlier, but try and take this pacifism thing seriously. And I think, you know, a lot of Christianity has been complicit in leading to a, you know, like the evangelical Christians in the States are very supportive of things like the NRA and stuff, complicit in violence. But, you know, as much as I want to be a pacifist, I am a bloke, and we talked about guys can get angry. And that was the other problem. The common factor in all of these shootings is, you know, a gun. The common factor is also a man or a male.
It makes me wonder, do you think the world would be a better place if there were no guns in the world? Like if we could wave a magic wand and every gun in the world disappeared?
Would it be a better place? Well, yeah, it would be, but it would be a not as good as a place for some people in some instances, people who might need to protect themselves from nature or, but yeah, if we were able to remove all guns from the world, then we have a lot less people killed by guns. Yeah, a lot less fear of people being killed by guns. We'd still have violence. We'd still have people killing people. And then in one sense, it's harder to defend. You can't be that one policeman fighting off the 10 or 15 people in a gang coming to kill someone, you know, if you don't have a gun. So, but I just think if we had a magic wand, it would be better because I think they're unhelpful in the hands of us. They are a tool, but we can be tools.
See, I think Australia has just lucked into the perfect situation where certainly in Australia, I'm glad we have guns. I'm glad the police have guns. If you got rid of every gun and that meant that no police officer had a gun either, I think that's a worse society than what we have now because biology is unequal.
Interesting.
We have,
okay.
We have men. You know, if you're the biggest bloke in the room and there's no guns in the world, you can just cause whatever mayhem you want and no one's going to stop you. Whereas if you know that if I start causing a ruckus, some dude with a gun, it doesn't matter how big he is, he can be the smallest guy in the world. If he's got a gun, he can stop me. And so guns are an equalizing force.
But then to be dominant, you've got to have the biggest gun. I don't know. What about a crossbow or a taser? Aren't they equalizing forces too?
I would feel a lot safer knowing that the police were carrying guns rather than crossbows.
Yeah, but there are some police forces that in the world that they don't carry guns. They'll have guns back at home base if they need to go and get a gun, which, you know, again, slows them down. But, you know, the UK's had that for...
The UK has a ludicrously low rate of gun ownership.
Mm.
0.2 of a gun per 100 people or something like that. It's ridiculously low, whereas the US is 101 guns per 100 people. Australia is something like 24 guns per 100 people. The UK is weird.
Yep.
I was shocked by the UK when I saw their stats.
Yep.
I think it'd be good if the world got rid of nuclear weapons.
I was thinking that before. If we had a magic wand for that one, heck yes.
Yeah, get rid of that one. We're so lucky we still exist with nuclear weapons.
Mm. All right, well, we've gone on long enough, Nick.
We have. You know, Chris, I'm feeling grateful.
Tell me about it.
Grateful that I live in the great old country of Australia and not in some crazy country with 300 million guns.
Actually, there's a solution.
What, everyone moves to Australia?
Or elsewhere, but yeah, out of America.
Every left-wing person leaves the United States. That may not be good either, Chris.
And then we build a wall around them.
To keep them in.
That's right.
Sadly, they've still got nuclear weapons.
Yeah.
And the biggest military in the history of mankind. And they have guns. We'll have to build a roof over it as well as a wall.
And that's where we're going to leave the conversation. A wall, a roof, and all the good people moving out.
People without guns, please come to Australia. You're very welcome here.
So thank you for listening to the Eternity Ward. If you've got any comments you want to make, any questions...
Along those lines of what you were just talking about then, it's been noticeable to me that people haven't been listening to God. At the end of every episode, we have God come on and do a little spiel about it'd be really helpful to these boys if you do this and that and the other.
Mm.
No one does it.
A few do. Not many.
Oh, do they?
We get some interaction. But we want more interaction.
We want more. If you listen to this.
We're greedy. We want more.
If you enjoy this. Well, it's not just that. Like, if you actually enjoy this. Like, when I listen to podcasts, Chris.
Mm.
I listen to them because I think that the conversation is interesting.
Mm.
And so if I had the opportunity of conversing with the person that makes that podcast, I would jump at it.
Amen, brother. I listen to podcasts as well because I really enjoy people's conversations and I have an opportunity to subscribe and I have an opportunity to comment on their site and I choose often not to do that. So I understand it.
Yeah, same.
Yeah. But yeah, have a go. I'm going to have a go. I'm going to interact more with other podcasts that I listen to. I'm going to go and do that.
Yep. Anyway.
I really like talking to you, Chris.
That's
good. I hope that comes through. I hope I don't come across as antagonistic because I really do.
Cool. All right. So goodbye from me. Look after yourselves. We love you.
We do love you. Farewell.
Scott here again. If at any point in this podcast you found yourself yelling vainly into the void at two idiots who can't even hear you and refuse to listen to you, then congratulations. You know exactly how I feel. Luckily for you, there are other ways to contribute. You can leave reviews on iTunes or wherever you listen to it, share it on social media, or discuss it in your blog, podcast, or fellowship group. Subscribe, like, nod your head, raise your fist, shout amen, but probably don't send a prayer because I'm kind of busy right now. Join the discussion in the comment sections, ask questions, and do come back and join us again here on the Eternity Ward.